sunny with a high near 70. Saturday night, clear with a low around 42. And taking a peek at Sunday, sunny with a high near 75. Sunday night, mostly clear with a low around 45. So there you go. All in all, a really encouraging weather report. That is, if you do like warmer temperatures and sunshine. And looks like we're just going to... The past couple days of this week were really beautiful, coming off the heels of the 39th annual Moscow Renaissance Fair. And it looks like, other than a few clouds today, which I certainly didn't mind, we're gonna jump back into the sunshine, particularly as we head towards the weekend. And so that sounds very good to me. Now, I've got a little Johnny Winter queued up here. We're going to play a little blues music on the Wild Clearwater Country Show. And while I have your attention, I would like to remind everyone that the views expressed on the Wild Clearwater Country Show are those of the individuals speaking during the show and not necessarily those of KRFP Moscow or any other organizations. So let's take a short music break here, play some Johnny Winter, and then when we get back, we'll jump into the comments made by retired federal judge James Redden and kind of the spark that it has provided over the past 10 days or so. Please don't touch that dial. Hopefully you'll stay with us. You're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. This is KRFP Moscow.
We'll be right back.
All right, a little Johnny Winter there, and welcome back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. And if it sounds like I have a frog in my voice or up my nose, I do apologize because I do have a bit of a cold. What can I say? The month of April was a lot of fun. Friends of the Clearwater certainly was involved in all sorts of great events, whether it was the Moscow Hemp Festival, the 39th Annual Moscow Renaissance Fair, going on a Selway River backpacking trip with University of Idaho recreation students, or attending a victory party, so to speak, up in Kooski for all of those that have worked so hard for the past 2 years to keep the megaloads off of US 12. Certainly KRFP Moscow has been a big part of that battle too, and members of the station were up there for that party also. So all in all, I got partied out over the past 4 to 6 weeks, and come Sunday, I couldn't breathe too good. But a few days later, I'm certainly feeling a little bit better, and I even plan on playing a little basketball tonight. So, hey, you know, one of the best remedies is to sweat it out. So I hopefully whatever I have left in me, I'll sweat it out tonight, come in tomorrow, and fire in on all cylinders. But nonetheless, today we're going to talk about salmon and steelhead recovery. In not only in Wild Clearwater Country in north central Idaho, or for that fact throughout Idaho, but just along the entire Columbia River Basin. So that includes the states of Washington and all of its tributaries, the states of Oregon and all its tributaries, and certainly Idaho. Even into western Wyoming, as the Snake River's headwaters, of course, are way up in Wyoming. But for the most part, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. And so why are we going to talk about that today? Retired federal judge James Redden gave an interview, it was probably about 2 weeks ago by now, maybe a little bit less. And I quote, Judge Redden said, "I think we need to take those dams down." And certainly, who is Judge James Redden? Well, he's a retired federal judge who has been serving over the great, I think it's been going on about 20 years right now, the 20-year history of dam decommissioning versus salmon recovery here in the Columbia River Basin. Pardon me. And so Judge James Redden has, I think he's rejected 3 or 4 biological opinions right now, which are, a biological opinion is basically a very complicated, lengthy document that's put forth by the federal government, particularly with the help of the Army Corps of Engineers and NOAA Fisheries. And those three entities work together to produce a professional opinion, if you will, on what steps need to be taken within the Columbia River, what steps need to be taken so that salmon and steelhead can, quote, recover according to the Endangered Species Act. So to make a long story short, the biological opinion is the federal government's way of saying, see, we're doing enough to comply with the law, a.k.a. the Endangered Species Act, and this plan should be adequate. We're doing everything we can, and therefore you should not find us guilty of impeding salmon and steelhead recovery. So, I believe over the past 2 decades, at least not the past 15 years, retired Judge Redden, before he was retired, he reviewed and declined biological opinions from the Bush administration, I believe it was the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, and now the Obama administration. I don't know if Judge Redden rejected a biological opinion from the senior Bush administration, but I am fairly confident that he's rejected 3 biological opinions from the last 3 presidential administrations, with the most recent one, most recent one coming about a year or so ago with the Obama administration. So it was kind of a big deal. Since then, Judge Redden, who is a very respected judge from what I can tell, certainly some people don't like his opinions or the way he rules, and others do. But but that's not what, you know, you're not supposed to like a judge. You know, I mean, yeah, we can form opinions about a judge and say, oh, I really like that judge, or I really don't like that judge. And that is largely has to do with whether or not the judge rules in ways that are according to our values and our opinions, you know, our politics. But one thing that all judges should be held up to is to enforce the letter of the law. And in my opinion, Judge James Redden has done that over the past 15 or 20 years. And I think a lot of people would agree with that, that he's a very honest judge, and he's done his best to implement the law. And let's face it, while we have fish factories, a.k.a. hatcheries, all over the West, particularly here in Idaho, and in the Columbia River Basin, the fact of the matter is that wild salmon and steelhead runs continue to decline. And that's really something that when I moved to Idaho in 2005, had I not taken the time to study the subject and kind of, put my nose under the tent and see what's under there, I would have never realized that salmon and steelhead runs, even Pacific lamprey, are continuing to slide towards extinction. And why is that? Because we have these fish factories or these fish hatcheries, which are just that. They're band-aids that kind of lull the public into believing that we're not killing, wiping out native wild species such as salmon and steelhead and Pacific lamprey. And while you can make the argument, well, hey, you know, we need the electricity, we need the power, we need the economic production, we need dams, we need water storage, and by having fish factories, we have both. Well, in my opinion, there are other solutions to this, as complicated as it may be, and by continuing to spend hundreds of millions of dollars per year of hard-earned taxpayer dollars on fish hatcheries, the Endangered Species Act states that the federal government and the American people must restore and or recover species that are imperiled or on the brink of extinction. And so there's a lot of work to be done. And the fact of the matter is that salmon and steelhead populations continue to decline, despite the fact that every season or every year there's steelhead derbies, and there's all sorts of people getting excited and spending money on salmon. The fact of the matter is that they're frankenfish. They're not wild fish. They're genetically not as resilient. These are not the fish that used to swim up the Clearwater for eons and eons in time immemorial with the Nemi Poo. Instead, these are fish that are hatched in almost like a little trailer camp there, and they're injected with all sorts of computer devices, and then they're sealed up, and then they're flushed down a tube, and they end up in a big pool, and they hang out in a pool for a while, and then they end up in a big tanker boat. The tanker boat takes them downstream or takes them upstream, and then they got all these fish ladders if they can make it up and down the fish ladders and out to the ocean and back. I mean, it is just an incredible operation, how much money we spend on frankenfish. It's really absurd. So there's a little bit of the backdrop there. Judge James Redden says, I think we need to take those dams down. And since then, for about 2 weeks, there's kind of been a blitzkrieg of opinions and views and articles and blog posts all about, what are we going to do with salmon and steelhead? So I figured we'd jump off or jump into a little bit of the history here and some of the facts. So for thousands of years, wild salmon and steelhead have been cornerstones of Idaho's cultural heritage and our natural world. Historically, the Nimiipuu and Shoshone Bannock tribes depended on salmon for food and spiritual reasons. Salmon saved Lewis and Clark from starvation. In the late 1800s, salmon fed early miners, loggers, and settlers. More recently, families built strong bonds with Idaho's lands, rivers, and each other during outings in search of wild Chinook. Today, salmon and steelhead help fuel Idaho's economy. Idaho Fish and Game reports that steelhead fishermen spend an average of $316 a day during fishing trips. A recent economic study showed that restored salmon and steelhead runs could generate $544 million a year for Idaho's economy. But most significantly, salmon are keystone species, building blocks in Idaho's web of life. Each year when adult salmon return to Idaho from the Pacific to spawn, they bring tons of rich nutrients home from the ocean to Idaho's otherwise sterile mountain streams. Hundreds of species feed on returning salmon, and the carcasses of these natural wonders, along with waste from animals that eat them, fertilize our wild rivers, alpine meadows, and the lush green forests so valued by humans today. Salmon fuel the ecosystems of Idaho's most treasured places, places Idahoans know and love. Without wild salmon, these places will change over time, starved of the rich ocean nutrients the landscapes and their inhabitants so desperately need. Without salmon, rivers like the Salmon, Selway, Locksaw, and Clearwater will wither and die. Places like the Frank Church Wilderness, the Selway Bitterroot, Hell's Canyon, and the Sawtooth National Recreation will cease to be whole. Culturally and ecologically, salmon abundance has made Idaho what it is today. At the time of Lewis and Clark, about 4 million salmon returned to the Salmon and Clearwater River basins each year. Even in the 1960s, after decades of habitat destruction and overfishing, wild salmon still returned in self-sustaining numbers, about 130,000 annually. Today, Idaho's wild salmon are struggling. For Redfish Lake sockeye, only a captive breeding program stands between survival and extinction. Our populations of wild spring summer Chinook, once the largest salmon run in the world, are now down to 20,000 returning fish a year. Four federal dams on the Lower Snake River are killing them. The four Lower Snake River dams are lethal for salmon and steelhead. Adult salmon migrating upstream to their spawning grounds must climb stair-step ladders to get past eight dams plugging the Columbia and Snake Rivers. Government scientists say that 20-30% of returning adults die during passage over the dams and through the reservoirs behind them. But the dams cause even more problems for baby salmon, aka smolts, migrating to the sea. Smolts do not swim to the ocean. Instead, they are carried downstream tail first by the river's current. Dams have stilled the snake's current. The reservoirs, coupled with crossing the dams, directly kills 50% of all smolts and stresses the rest in ways including, number one, migration time to the ocean is extended by weeks, disrupting the biological transformation from freshwater to saltwater. Two, stagnant reservoirs become too warm, killing smolts or making them easier prey. In 2006, a small victory was made when a court-ordered spill program at the dams, others won court-ordered spill grams at the dams beginning in 2006 that improved smolt survival and adult returns, but those measures have not been sufficient to restore Snake River salmon. Ultimately, it will require a lower snake dam removal. So I think that last part there is in a nutshell, in 2006, I believe it was Judge James Redden, and I could be wrong, and I apologize if I am, but I believe it would be Judge James Redden that ordered that that we need to start increasing the spill, aka the water that's traveling downstream, and instead of keeping it behind the dams, that we need to start releasing more of that water, even if it's not an opportunistic time to aka generate electricity and make a lot of money, even if that is if that is an inconvenient truth, the court's ordered that these spills have to start occurring. So that's been going on for 6 years, and I believe in an objective assessment that it has been slightly successful, certainly by no means is it ultimately, you know, what many scientists feel needs to happen. And that is that most scientists agree that removing 4 federal dams on the Lower Snake River is necessary to save Idaho's wild salmon from extinction. These scientists also agree that if Pacific salmon are to survive anywhere, it's going to be here in Idaho. This is why. Our fish, a.k.a. Idaho's fish, well, we just call them the salmon and steelhead and the Pacific lampreys that come up the Columbia Basin and into wild Clearwater country. These fish are hardier. They're hardier. In other words, they're migrating farther and higher than any salmon species in the world. These species are also best suited to survive climate change, this particular salmon run. And the other biggest factor, or the other factor, possibly the biggest and most important factor, is Idaho's vast public lands offer plenty of intact habitat. So certainly whether you're talking about wild Clearwater country, or whether you're talking about the Sawtooths, or whether you're talking about this Frank Church River of No Return country, all of Idaho's vast unspoiled public lands, whether they're roadless areas like Wheatus Creek or Fish and Hungry Creek or Meadow Creek, or whether we're talking about big designated wilderness areas like the Selway Bitterroot Wilderness, the Frank Church Wilderness. It's because of that foresight. It's because of the vision of millions of Americans and Idaho politicians, leaders that said, you know what, we've got all this incredible wild land and healthy free-flowing rivers. Why don't we protect more of these areas? And lo and behold, wouldn't you know, 50, 60 years later, we have species like salmon and steelhead that possibly would be extinct without the habitat even being here. So certainly, wild Clearwater country is a big part of that. And now the last section I want to read here is removing the dams. How does that happen? Removing the dams will require congressional action, and dam removal opponents have engaged powerful political allies to protect the status quo. In a lawsuit, in last August, so that would be in 2011, I believe, federal judge James Redden found the government's latest salmon recovery plan illegal and based on bad science. Judge Redden ordered the plan fixed by 2014. Since that time, Judge James Redden has retired, and what he rejected was the biological opinion. So now, the Obama administration has about a year and a half before they will be back into court and to present their newly modified and, quote, highly improved biological opinion. So time will tell on that. But there's a little bit of the background to the situation. And certainly it's a very complicated one, and that's just a small piece of the pie. I think what we'll do is we'll take a small music break here, and then when we get back, we'll read an op-ed that was penned by Brooklyn Baptiste of the Nimi Poo. Op-ed just recently appeared in the Oregonian, and it was in response to retired Judge James Redden's statement that, quote, I think we need to take those dams down. We're going to play a little bit more Johnny Winter here. You're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show, KRFP, Moscow.
Smile. crowd bows ya. Walk the streets late at night. If you love me just a little bit, baby, why in the world don't you treat me right?
A little Johnny Winter playing the blues and playing it loud. Welcome back to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. It's nice to be with you here on a Wednesday. I got 30 minutes after 4 on the clock. We're taking you up to 5 o'clock. We're talking about Judge James Redden and the ripple effect that his statement, quote, "I think we need to take those dams down," unquote, has caused. This is a recent op-ed by Brooklyn Baptiste from the NIMIPU. It appeared in the Oregonian last week, I believe. U.S. District Judge James Redden recently interviewed on the federal Columbia River Power System case he stepped down from last fall, said he thinks the 4 lower Snake River dams need to be breached to help salmon. Public responses varied. Some claim Redden had, quote, "revealed a biased environmentalism." Nonsense. Redden always did the job he was required to do as the law demanded, which is finding facts, applying existing law to those facts, and making decisions within his power. That's why he enjoyed a perfect record of being affirmed on appeal. It felt good to hear Redden's assessment. reflects a common sense reality that others, including the government at times, have sought to suspend or silence. The Nez Perce tribe's goal is to restore Colombian Snake River salmon runs to healthy, harvestable levels. Supported by concurring science extending back more than a decade, the tribe has been a leading advocate for breaching the lower snake dams and investing in any affected local communities. More natural migration to and from the extraordinary salmon habitat of the Clearwater and Salmon Rivers of Idaho would do more to restore salmon and steelhead than any other measure. Redden's comments reminded the tribe how much it respected his integrity and fearlessness. The FCRPS, which is the Federal Columbia River Power System case, over time has become the most politicized litigation in the Northwest. No Indian tribe enjoys putting its legal interests at stake in a non-Indian court where its culture, perspective, and treaty-based rights may not be fully understood. Judges like Redden, acting with independence given to them by the U.S. Constitution, provide a measure of confidence that decisions won't be based on political calculation or power, but on the requirements of existing law. Redden's courage was evident throughout 10 years of handling an extraordinary complex lawsuit with unwavering independence and care. Where to now? Redden left the parties with a transparent choice. If the federal agencies maintain the status quo, litigation will inevitably resume in 2014, again focused on the law and the science. But new factors have arisen and can play important roles in taking a broader, long-term strategic approach. The Northwest Power Grid, for example, has serious source integration problems. Wind power alone is creating power surpluses that rebut the false dilemma of those who say the Lower Snake Dams provide critical power. They do not. A regional solutions table focused comprehensively on the Columbia watershed, on long-range planning across state boundaries, could find that the immediate needs of imperiled salmon lead one to a broader strategic plan for the Northwest that addresses fish, power, transportation, and other economic, environmental, and even cultural needs with a rationality that is missing from the inherited status quo. Energy industries should see their interests at stake at such a table. Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber, long an advocate for salmon restoration, should also. Elsewhere, he is looking at strategic, economic, and energy issues that should draw him to the possibilities of such a table, perhaps even to its leadership. There are always different ways forward. One thing is certain. The Nez Perce tribe intends to do all that it can for the salmon that have been with our people since time immemorial. Thank you. I'm going to Kasiwayu. I might be butchering that, and I certainly do apologize if I do, but that is the way, at least I'm trying to pronounce the word, that means thank you in Nimiipuu. So nonetheless, that whole article there was by Brooklyn Baptiste, who is the chairman of the Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee. Now, Bert Bowler of Snake River Salmon Solutions, he has this to say on his website, which is www.snakeriversalmonsolutions.org. Right now, millions of salmon and steelhead protected by the Endangered Species Act are getting killed in the Columbia Basin. Industrial interests that turn the Snake and Columbia Rivers into a hydroelectric and transportation factory make sure that salmon are secondary to river operations. Our U.S. senators and congressional representatives in the Pacific Northwest walk in lockstep with the industrial interests in the Bonneville Power Administration, which is the BPA, supporting the myth that any measures short of preserving the status quo would destroy the area's economy. The Endangered Species Act, once called the most powerful environmental law in our nation, has become largely spineless when pitted against the industrial interests in the Columbia River. Solutions proposed by federal authorities and the BPA to protect the imperiled fish are small-time, marginal efforts that have failed to make any significant gains. Recovery planning has yet to demonstrate a commitment to restoring this Northwest icon. Pacific Northwest electric ratepayers and taxpayers are spending hundreds of millions of dollars every year on wasteful and ineffective programs in the name of protecting salmon. Many of the industrial interests receive millions in taxpayer subsidies that are dependent on the status quo. In bold letters, there has to be a better way. So, one of the, quote, better ways that I've certainly, you know, seen talked about in the newspaper, and I'm sure you have, is a quote, collaborative solution. And I couldn't disagree with that idea anymore. In my opinion, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion, for the past 20 years, a collaborative of sorts has been occurring. In other words, a number of compromises, and I take this, you take that, give me this, and I'll be willing to fork over that. That's what's taken place over the 20 years, over the past 20 years, and it hasn't led to one iota of recovery of wild salmon and steelhead solutions. A collaboration, in my opinion, to take care of this problem, I don't see a collaborative leading to the decommissioning of the four lower Snake River dams. What I'm more concerned with is the science and the law. And if I was, I'm personally against any type of collaborative proposal. Certainly this started off when Idaho Senator Mike Crapo said, dam removal, the removal of the four lower Snake River dams needs to be on the table. Well, that's great that you said that, Senator Crapo, and that's important because I don't know how many Idaho politicians have actually came out and said that before. But when I look at that comment and I look at the track record of Senator Mike Crapo and his Oahe collaborative and what he's trying to do up here in the Clearwater Basin and what these other collaboratives have been trying to do in places like Montana, I think Crapo was setting the table in a very indirect way by wanting to form a collaborative, by saying, hey, let's put dam decommissioning needs to be put on the table along with other solutions. I think that's Crapo's way of saying, like a wink and a nod, hey, let's get a collaborative going so that we can protect the status quo. That's at least in my opinion. I don't see, collaboratives have now become, are now starting to be pushed into our society, pushed into the news as solutions to, quote, problems. Well, you see, before there were collaborations, there was the law. You know, before there were collaborations, there was science. And what we've fallen into this trap now of instead of following the law, instead of holding the agencies responsible to the letter of the law, and instead of incorporating the best available science into our decision making, now we're putting this goody two shoe icing on the cake collaborative spin on everything and saying, hey, the collaborative is the solution. Where, in my opinion, a collaboration is just another way of saying, hey, let's make some more compromises so everyone can have a little bit of piece of the pie, but nothing will really be solved. Essentially, you know, ecosystems cannot function through collaboration. Okay? I mean, ecosystems can function through law and science. But one thing that collaborations bring to the table more so than law and science is meddling by humans. You know, compromises do not bring answers or solutions to problems. Instead, they do just that. They bring hedges. Hey, if you do this, I'll do that, and I guess, you know, this is okay. Well, is it really okay if the salmon and steelhead go extinct and a collaboration comes together that says, you know, the dams need to be in place, but we need to, restore this, you know, rip out this many more roads and restore this much more habitat with the hope that the salmon are going to get here? I just, and like I said, you're entitled to your opinion, okay? But the letters of the law and the best available science is the solution to this problem. A collaboration, in my opinion, is simply a hoax. And I think Senator Crapo, and I could be wrong, I think Senator Crapo knew full and well that when he said, hey, damn decommissioning needs to be put on the table, it was simply a wink that said, hey, this is my way of saying I want to get another collaborative going so we can keep the status quo in place and so that we can, quote, come to a solution and everyone will feel a whole lot better because we're, quote, collaborating. Okay, we're talking about it. You know, we're making compromises. Bull. Bull. The salmon and steelhead don't need compromises. They need damn decommissioning. And while I am far from an expert on this opinion, I think the local economy would definitely benefit from salmon and steelhead recovery. I think we could have best of both worlds. I think we could have a lot of salmon and steelhead in the rivers, and I think we could transform communities like Orofino and Lewiston and Kuski. I think they could get a huge bolt in recreation and tourism dollars if we could get more fish in the water and take out more cement. The whole energy solution, I think efficiency. I think energy efficiency is really the solution or a solution. Another solution possibly, and while there are certainly problems with wind power and wind farms, you need to start following all the wind farms that are going up in the Columbia River Basin and how the BPA, the Bonneville Power Authority, is attempting to shut that energy out of the energy grid. Saying, you know what, we have a surplus of energy and we don't need your energy because we've got so much from the hydroelectricity that we don't really need it. And at the same time, we have an Obama administration and a Congress that is doling out monies and incentives for renewable forms of electricity. So it's just not matching there. You know, we have incentives, and yet when the incentives are given and wind farms are put up, and granted they're far from perfect, and I'm not going to say, you know, they're good for bird migration corridors, but when all of a sudden those renewable energy solutions are not being allowed to pump energy into the grid, that's maintaining the status quo. It's a pretty complicated solution, but I think we could meet our energy needs. I think we could have a boost in economy. And most importantly, I think we could have salmon and steelhead swimming in places like Wheatus Creek, swimming in places like Meadow Creek, swimming in higher numbers, ascending over the Selway Falls, swimming in places like the North Fork of the Clearwater. And so when we get back, I'm going to read an article by Larry McLeod, former Friends of the Clearwater staff member and still very good friend. Larry wrote an article about decommissioning decommissioning Dworshak Dam. And so we're going to play a little bit more Johnny Winter. When we get back, we'll read you that article by Larry. This is the Wild Clearwater Country Show, KRFP, Moscow.
Lucky 13. Trouble, man, I'm sure gonna give 'em some. I believe old Dallas, man, is the meanest town I know. I believe that Dallas, man's the meanest town I know. Man, 'cause you ain't safe in Dallas. I don't care where you go. You know that I ain't evil, man, just having fun. So much shit in Texas, bound to step in some. Drive back to Dallas, take my get my arms on.
Johnny Winter there, and you're listening to the Wild Clearwater Country Show. Great to be with you here on a Wednesday afternoon. We've been talking about dam decommissioning and the recovery of wild salmon and steelhead populations. And certainly retired federal judge James Redden, his quote about a week or two ago, "I think we need to take those dams down," has certainly revived or sent it's had a ripple effect where a lot of people are now talking about it again. And certainly a great website is snakeriversalmonsolutions.org. So it's www.snakeriversalmonsolutions.org. And I had the pleasure to meet Bert Bowler just last fall down at Lewis and Clark State College. Friends of the Clearwater is able to sponsor a dam decommissioning or salmon and steelhead recovery panel discussion, and we brought in James Holt of the Nimi Poo, and Sam Mace with Save Our Wild Salmon, and Dustin Ahern of Lewiston, who's an owner, an entrepreneur down in Lewiston. And then we brought in Bert Bowler, who's a retired Idaho fish and game biologist. And he started this website here, snakeriversalmonsolutions.org. And so please check it out. It's a great, great website. Very, very informative. And so I encourage you to check that out. Now, you know, certainly here in Wild Clearwater Country, the first dam that pops in my mind is Dworshak Dam. And the steelhead, the wild steelhead run, which I believe was the largest wild steelhead run in the lower 48, at least before they poured all that cement in and blocked the river and blocked that incredible resilient steelhead migration up into places like Wheatus Creek and Cayuse Creek and Kelly Creek, and they don't make it up there anymore. That run is over, at least until the dam is in place. So, Larry McClaud, a former Friends of the Clearwater staff member, wrote this a few years ago. It says, "Free the North Fork." The North Fork of the Clearwater River is an important fish resource in north-central Idaho. The water volume is the most of any fork, and the Bee Run steelhead, which used to migrate up the North Fork, was the biggest and strongest in the entire basin. With help from the North Fork, the Clearwater River system contributes more water to the Snake River system than any other tributary, and it is colder and therefore critical to anadromous fish survival. The beautiful wildlands of the North Fork are rich in history. Native Americans have lived in the watershed and depended on its resources for thousands of years. Lewis and Clark passed through the drainage over 200 years ago, almost dying of hunger. In 1860, gold was discovered near Pierce, Idaho. Although a railroad was planned and never built, hundreds of dirt roads have been carved into the landscape to extract timber from the rich forests. Violent storms have washed out many poorly built roads throughout the years, with the most recent coming in 95. Mining claims have had a negative impact on water quality in the North Fork, too. The watershed has even survived DDT, which was once widely sprayed in a futile attempt to combat a gypsy moth outbreak. despite these past disturbances, the greatest negative impact on the North Fork in the last 100 years was the building of Dworshak Dam in 1966 to 1972. Federal tax dollars built the 717-foot-high dam, third highest in the U.S. Over 6.5 million cubic yards of concrete has produced a pool extending 53 miles upstream. The dam can hold approximately 3.5 million acre-feet of water, an equivalent of 4.5 billion tons. Dworshak Dam fragments the ecosystem and prevents the web of life from functioning properly. Salmon and steelhead can no longer migrate to the ocean and return to spawn. Bull trout numbers have declined, and important winter range for elk was lost when the reservoir filled. It is ecologically vital for the North Fork system to be connected with the main Clearwater River. There is only one way this can happen. So was it worth it for the American citizens to build Dworshak Dam? Many people say no, including former Governor Cecil Andrus, who originally supported the project but has since had a change of heart. Andrus has been quoted as saying his biggest regret while in office was supporting the building of Dworshak Dam. The late Senator Frank Church also regretted his support for the project. Controversy surrounded the construction project from the outset. Says Court Conley in Idaho for The Curious, there have always been more politicians than suitable dam sites. Building the highest straight-axis gravity dam in the Western Hemisphere on a river with a mean flow of 5,000 cubic feet per second at a cost of $312 million in the name of flood control is the second funniest joke in Idaho. The funniest joke is inside the visitor center. A government sign entreats, quote, help protect this delicate environment for future generations. In 1980, the dam developed a 236-foot-long crack on the reservoir side, spraying 7,700 gallons of water per minute past the waterhouse and down into the river. The cost to fix the leak exceeded $1 million. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers drilled 70 holes into the dam to intercept the crack, relieving pressure on the dam. A plastic sheet was then lowered over the crack. This reduced the flow by half. Additional repairs, including a patch made of sawdust, cement, and volcanic ash, further reduced the flow to an acceptable level. Dworshak Dam is temporary, unsustainable, and possibly unstable. If you live downstream, you might want to get your inner tubes ready. Quote, after getting the proper equipment in place to dewater the unit and conduct an inspection, the Army Corps of Engineers found the unit was leaking through the head cover seal in about the same area that had been repaired several times before, dating back to the 1980s. This is according to the Army Corps of Engineers 2 years ago. We are hopeful that the temporary repairs will last until that time, mid-September, but cannot make that guarantee, said David Tucker, Dworshak's acting operations project manager. According to the AP, on October 5, 2008, Dworshak Dam got a, quote, potentially unsafe, unquote, rating by the Army Corps. It rated Dworshak a 2 on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the safest. Quote, maybe it's time the U.S. Corps of Engineers took out the dam. It's not a natural part of the environment and puts a lot of people in danger, end quote, wrote Connie Moan, former Orofino resident, on January 17, 2009, in a letter to the editor. Quote, exactly when are the Corps planning to take the dam down? I think starting this year would be a good idea given its potential life-threatening problems, unquote. Perhaps now is the right time to encourage your politicians to free the North Fork. Restoring the North Fork would create jobs, help restore salmon, steelhead, elk, and bull trout, and increase the recreation opportunities, giving a boost to the local economy. What politician would not want to correct the wrong of the past and help the economy and the environment? Remember, as you are reading this, nature is tirelessly working to breach the dam. Water, wind, and temperature change are all doing their part in doing what needs to be done. If we can't or won't breach the dam, then nature will do it, and the result might not be ideal from the standpoint of humans. So there you go. That's from Larry McLeod, former FOC member. The name of that was Free the North Fork. And, well, Larry, we miss you. If you're listening right now, we hopefully, you know, Larry's down the Gila country, down in the Gila wilderness area of southern New Mexico, and certainly we miss him. And it was a great essay, appeared in the Defender Quarterly Newsletter a few years ago. So Some groups that you, if you're interested, if you agree with me in the fact that we need to decommission the four Lower Snake River dams and places like Dwarshak Dam, and we need to restore wild salmon and steelhead fish so that we can not only do what's legally required of us, but also morally, ethically, ecologically, spiritually, historically. If you want to learn more about this issue, again, go to snakeriversalmonsolutions.org. Check out groups like Save Our Wild Salmon or groups like Idaho Rivers United. Of course, groups like Friends of the Clearwater. All of us do advocate for dam decommissioning and restoring. Some of those groups that I mentioned might be interested in a collaborative proposal. I certainly won't speak for Friends of the Clearwater, but personally, I think that's the wrong path to go down. I think the past 20 years has been a mock collaborative in the fact where nothing has gotten done. It's been a series of compromises, a series of band-aids, and a series of the status quo. And in my opinion, that's what collaboratives are about. They're about keeping those in power, with the wealth, in charge, and giving little crumbs to those that participate in the process. I don't believe it's a legitimate process, and I don't think any type of collaborative solution, while it sounds really nice and fuzzy, I don't think it'll do one good thing to restore salmon and steelhead. In fact, I'd be willing to bet something, I don't know what, that if there was any type of collaborative put together, that there certainly would, that the four Lower Snake River dams would not be decommissioned. I'd be willing to put something on that. So nonetheless, hope you've enjoyed the show. This is the Wild Clearwater Country Show. Let's give you a quick weather report here. Tonight, partly cloudy with low around 32. Winds gusting as high as 30 miles an hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 51. Winds gusting as high as 21 miles an hour. Thursday night, mostly clear with low around 29. Friday, sunny with a high near 62. Friday night, clear with low around 37. Saturday, sunny with a high near 70. Sunday, sunny with a high near 75. Everyone, enjoy the rest of your evening. You're listening to KRFP Moscow.
KRFP thanks its donors and underwriters, including
Mikey's Gyros, specializing in Greek and Middle Eastern cuisine such as gyros, falafel, hummus, tabbouleh, and spanakopita. Located at 527 South Main Street in Moscow.
You are listening to KRFP Moscow.
We are now no longer the knights who say Nikkei. We are now the knights who say
KRFP Moscow.
Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region.